Your recording has started. You may continue.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Review of All Rights Protection Mechanism Subteam for Data Call held on Wednesday, the 13th of June at 1600 UTC. On the call today, we have Susan Payne, Greg Rafert, Phil Corwin. We have apologies from Renee Fossen and from staff, Julie Headland, Barry Cobb, Ariel Yang, Antonetta Mangiacati, and myself, Julie Bislin. I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. And with this, I'll turn it back over to you, Julie. Thank you.
Thank you, Julie. This is Julie Headland from staff, and thanks all for joining. We have quite a small group here, but we thought it was worthwhile to try to move ahead with addressing the remaining questions in the registrar survey. And so staff suggests that we could follow the format that we were using on the last call and just go ahead and read out the comments in the document and then just see whether or not Greg has any questions about those comments and proceed from there. Does anybody have anything they want to add, any other business or questions? And actually, I see Lori's joining the room. That's great. Welcome, Lori. I don't know if she's on audio yet, but and Susan's typing. And Susan says, hi, Lori. So anyway, let's suggest that we proceed that way, and hopefully Christine can join us too, and we'll catch her up. But staff will go ahead to the document, to question 12. And on question 12, it says, should the claims period continue to be mandatory? Yes, no, don't know, not sure. Susan says, don't think we need this since we have one of the sub-questions to four already asking if there should be sunrise or claims rather than both. And apologies for that noise in the background. So, any discussions on this item? And suggestion is perhaps to leave it out, this question 12.
Hi, it's Susan. Do you mind if I don't put my hand up because there's so few of us and I'm doing a fill and shuffling back and forth between screens?
No, absolutely. And we are such a small group anyway, and these are your comments, so please just go ahead and chime in, Susan. Thanks.
Yeah, okay. I just wanted to – I think I captured it in a subsequent note, but I just – I wanted to make sure we had a sort of question that covered the same grounds. That was one of the sub-questions to four, and we talked about it yesterday and agreed that we thought it was in the wrong place and needed to move down. But I just wanted to make sure that we remembered that we don't want to delete both of them. We do want to make sure that we kind of move that sub-question to four down if we were going to delete this question 12. And to the extent that anyone commented about 12, Christine said she agreed, but I don't think anyone else had expressed any particular views.
Thank you, Susan. And I see Christine is joining us. That's great. So, yeah, and I'm actually, this is Julie from staff, I'm looking back at question four just to see where that question was, because I do recall, and thank you for reminding us, that we did have a where we, that we wanted to move down from the question four sub-questions related to this, and I'm just trying to see if I can identify which that one is, but we also would have captured it in our notes as well. So we'll make sure, what we'll do is we'll look back at our notes and we'll make sure to link that statement in our notes to this particular question 12, so that we can be sure that one of the questions is retained, so that we're not that we still have a question that addresses this. And welcome, Christine. I'm very glad you can join. We just were talking about question 12. So So if there's no other comments on question 12, staff will go ahead and take that action to make sure that question is retained at least relating to question 12 and relating to the comment as to whether or not there should be both sunrise or claims. Question 13. How likely do you think the following outcomes would be if the length of the required claims period were extended? And the comment there is, I think,
shall I just pile in?
Go ahead, please. Yes.
Yeah, I didn't make a very extensive comment. I just said this question 12 and sorry, 13 and 14. I was just referring back to we've had this sort of same discussion earlier in the registrar section and also on when we did the registry section last week. So it was really just the same conversation about not sure if this really captures what we need. And I obviously have the memory of the goldfish because I, even though we talked about this again yesterday, I'm still not quite sure where we've come out on this. Yeah.
Thank you, Susan. Christine, please.
Hi, this is Christine. Yeah, this was one where this I believe that the point was that when we came up with this scale, because I think the scale is on every section, which is registries, brands, and registrars at this point, when we figure out what it's going to be, we figure out that it might be across all right. I'm clearly have had not enough coffee to be able to formulate a sentence yet this morning. I think when we figure out what this question is going to look like for one, it will probably extrapolate across all of the surveys, maybe with some slight variations, but I think that's where we left it. Correct me if I'm wrong. And I will continue to be drinking my coffee.
Thank you, Christine. And this is Julie from staff. So actually, I think also we had captured in the notes that based on the discussion when we were talking about the registry survey, I think that analysis group is going to go back and take a look at the construct and look at the comments received. And I think, actually, Susan, Christine. I think, Christine, there was I thought you were going to give some more thought to it as well, but I'll tell you what, let's, as staff, go ahead and look at the notes and make sure we're capturing it properly in each of these sections. And go ahead, Christine.
Yeah, this is Christine, and I am going to take a look. Honestly, I could be perfectly honest with you. We are in 10-hour days of Global Legal Summit here at Amazon this week. So I just the only moments I can eke out are literally to be in the calls with you guys. So I'm hoping to find some time in an evening to go through that. So I apologize for the delay, but that's why. Thanks.
No, and Christine, this is Julie from staff. No need to apologize at all. Obviously, this is volunteer work you're doing, and it's amazing that you are able to find any time for this, as this is, taking a lot of time from you already. So no need to apologize. Thank you very much.
And this is Greg from the analysis group. We'll certainly take a look, and we have been taking a look at thinking about how to revise the grid questions as well and whether they should be retained in their current form. But, of course, any input from Christine or others would be welcome.
Great. Thanks so much, Greg. Really appreciate that. And then the comment from Susan for question 14 is ditto, which is, again, we've got one of these grids that we want to be thinking about. So we'll note that as well. And so question 15. Which is, at what point in the registration process is a trademark record downloaded by you, the registrar? And then there's multiple choice selection. Susan says, we are missing all the questions about whether the registrar gets any feedback or has any insight into why a registrant might decide not to proceed, abandonment rates, et cetera. And I'm just going to go ahead and look at the I'm looking at the registrar survey, the document that we have in the Adobe Connect room, which I just got kicked out of, so I apologize for that.
Oh.
I'm going to get back in.
Julie, can I help?
Yeah, Yes, please go ahead. Thank you so much.
Yeah. So really, this wasn't exactly a comment in relation to question 15, which I personally didn't have a problem with question 15. Although I can see Christine is putting a question in, and so maybe we need to talk about question 15 as well. And then I couldn't work out how to make a comment without attaching it to a question. It's sort of a question that I guess comes somewhere, you know, somewhere after 15, to try and flag that I thought there were some things we hadn't covered. So should we maybe talk about 15 first, and then we can talk about, and I can point you to the bit in our document. That I sort of was the section where I just feel like maybe we haven't really got that covered off.
Susan, that sounds very good. Let's go ahead and proceed as you suggest.
And to answer Christine's question, she says, is this referring to a download from the TMCH? And I think the answer to that is yes. Oh, hang on.
And this is
I don't know
that, was
least, that question.
That was at least my understanding based on some work that we've done in the past on the TMCH, but I could certainly be wrong.
Certainly it's in our question. I mean, this is picked up, I think it's direct language from our original document. And I'm trying desperately to remind myself of what we were looking for here. And I think it's about it's trying to go back to that understanding of abandonment once the claims notice is received. I think it's trying to understand that, and particularly trying to understand, you know, whether trying to understand at what point registrants know about, know that there's a claims notice, I'm guessing. But I don't know if this is how it should be reflected or not, I'll have to be honest. Christine's got her hand up, so I'm saying very gratefully.
I think this, I'm sorry, was someone else trying to get in?
I heard Lori as well, but I think, Christine, you were first in the queue, and then Lori, please.
Okay, thanks. This is Christine. I'm thinking that what this refers to here is the problem that we were notified of when it came to sort of pre-ordering domains, where registrars would sort of take a domain name for pre-purchase or pre-order domain names, and then at that time they would be able to they would, when the domain name went to be actually like allocated to the registrar, because they were the first ones in, and then the domain name was actually ended up in the account of the registrant, and it was during the claims period, and so because they hadn't actually done the EPP transaction yet, there wasn't a trademark claims record to display to the registrant yet when you did the pre-order, but then at some point you had to complete the sale, and that's when the EPP code went through, and then at that point it was kind of awkward. So I think what we're trying to get at here is tell us some stories about a registration model that a registrar is using in which the current process, which assumes everyone is buying a domain name in real time, is not working for you. It's not something that you're doing. So at what point in time do you get that record? At what point in time do you show that record to the customer? You know, is it when you're, you know, when they have to pay? Because it kind of goes with this pre-order question that's Q16. As I recall, they were all kind of lumped together, which is why they're in that same box on the chart, is they were kind of one followed up after the other. That's what I'm thinking, but I will now stop talking and read the chat. Thanks.
Thank you very much. And then I think, Laura, you were trying to get in?
Yes, hi, because I have the same question about sort of the order of this and the context, because to me, it doesn't flow logically. I don't understand it. I almost feel like question 16 should go above, do you or did you ever offer a pre-order? if so, during the pre-order, did you download a trademark record from the TMCH? And if not at that point, when? Or I feel like it's not flowing logically. It's disjointed. And I think it would be very hard to understand why a registrar would want to answer this question, because it isn't clear. Like, because really what we're trying to get at is process, and at what point of time is the record downloaded, right? No matter if it's a pre-order, and that might not even be in a cart. Could a pre-order be on some kind of reserve list? That's what I'm also not understanding, because I would imagine that the cart doesn't last forever either, that a cart may or may not time out. There's, to me, a whole sequence of events that isn't quite coming through clearly. I'm trying to think of a suggested rewording, because I know to put a comment and not have a suggestion at this late date is not super, super helpful either. But I think I just had a recollection. Okay, Susan, I yield to you. No problem.
Yeah, and I may not explain this very well because I haven't gathered my thoughts, but I think I'm looking back at the document, you know, our subgroup one, and on page 10, it starts off in, if you go back to the original, if you go back to the charter note, if you look at that whole section that begins at the very bottom of page 10, and it talks about records of the abandonment rate, what are the rates of abandonment, the legacy NCCs versus new GTLDs, which we'll come on to in a minute because these are the things that aren't captured. But I think what we were trying to get to with asking this question was that this was sort of a reference back to Analysis Group's previous report on the Trademark Clearinghouse, where there was that highly disputed 97-odd% or 94%, can't remember the figure, of abandonment rate. And we were trying to understand whether every claims notice that got downloaded by the registrar happened at a point where someone was actually trying to purchase. So it was kind of at what stage in the, I'm vaguely thinking about a domain name, does the trademark claims notice end up downloaded and therefore get counted if the transaction then doesn't go through? You know, so for example, you know, the moment if I go onto GoDaddy's site and I think, oh, I'm interested in name X, you know, if I start doodling around and looking at a few of scenarios, trying to think of possible names I might be interested in buying, if the moment I start doing any of that and typing into the search box, does that lead to a claims notice? Or does it only lead to a claims notice when I click, yes, I want to buy, and I put it in my cart? Or does it only lead to a claims notice if I get somewhere even further along than that, like I'm actually paying?
So maybe, Susan, I'm going to dive in, if you don't mind.
So
maybe the question really is very simple. At what point in the purchase process is the claims notice generated? And then you could put down, you know, in the cart, in the search, in the purchase, and give the choices that way, or in a pre-order. I don't, you know, I'm wondering if 15 and 16 are actually the same question, just maybe we could word them more efficiently.
I don't think 15 and 16 are the same question, but I do think, yes, we could probably say something like, at what point is the claims notice downloaded?
Right.
And then seems like it would be a lot more. Yeah.
Yeah, and it gives them options, and we can just give them the options.
Yeah. Does that make sense to everyone else? Christine.
Thanks. This is Christine. I think so. Yeah, I think this whole section, I mean, I think if you go back and take all of the claims questions and put them in the same section, it will also help, because there's a general progression about, you know, how much notice of the claims notice, how is it working for you, and then how's your business model working in association with the claims notice. And that's part of the reason why I asked this question, is because I need to refer to an actual registrar, but at what point in the registration process is a trademark record downloaded? To my knowledge, the record of a trademark is downloaded for the purpose of a sunrise registration. At a claims notice, you display the notice, but I don't know that you download anything. And maybe I'm just mincing hairs here, but that was part of my confusion as well. I support a much better organization, and so far I've heard that what I've heard sounds good to me. Thanks.
This is Julie. Thank you. This is all really helpful discussion. I just have to say apologies. Not only is my network gone down, evidently something's happened to my cell phone, so I can't even get Skype out. So I'm not seeing the Adobe Connect room. I'm just hearing all of you, and the conversation sounds great, but just I hope you don't think I'm ignoring you. So I can't see hands, so I don't see who has hands up, but
this is Barry. Barry has his hand up.
Great. Go ahead, Barry. Thanks.
Thank you. Barry Cobb for the record. Just to put some clarity about the presentation of the claims notice. So the registrant enters in a potential domain name. The registrar will query the EPP system, and it comes back and says this domain is not, or no, the domain is not registered. Do you want to register it? At the point that the registrant does add it to the cart and they go through the process, then there's a secondary call to understand, is that particular domain name on the DNL or the domain's names list, which is also held at the registry? If it does, then the registry will send a CNIS code, which correlates to the trademark that's located in the TMCH database. That code is then taken by the registrar, and then just the notice is presented. I don't believe any information about what the mark is or any of the metadata around the mark is presented. It's just that once the registrar gets that CNIS code, then the claims notice is presented. Thank you.
Okay, so Christine's got her hand up, and then I have. So, Christine?
Thanks, Susan. Yeah, this is Christine. That is my understanding as well, which is why the word downloaded through me. So I don't think anyone's downloading a trademark record in the context of the claims notice. So that was sort of my question with question 15. If indeed we're only talking about claims at this point, the question itself is worded poorly to start with, which, you know, we take credit for since it looks like it was in our original document. But that's why we are having this big discussion, because we're not sure why this was there. Thanks.
Thanks, Christine. So, something for us to consider then, and perhaps with reference back to Barry again, is that explanation from Barry was super helpful from my perspective, because I know, you know, I'm kind of wearing the registrar hat here, but as you all know, I don't do this on, you know, I deal with policy stuff rather than the day-to-day, you know, communication with the TMCH in acquiring names. With that explanation, which, again, as I say, was extraordinarily helpful, do we need to be asking this question at all? Because it seems to me that, as I understood it, we were asking this question because we didn't know quite how the process of generating the claims notice happened and where it happened in the kind of purchase process. And maybe Barry's explanation answers it completely satisfactorily for us. Except insofar as we start talking about pre-order names. And if others agree with me, I mean, maybe once we have the transcript from this call, perhaps we could actually sort of cut out the section where Barry gives this very useful explanation and circulate it to everyone so that we don't come back and have this conversation multiple times, either within the subgroup or indeed within the full working group. What do you think?
Hi, this is Christine. I have my hand up. Yeah, I have my hand up. Yes, I agree completely. I think that's fantastic. That was a very helpful, succinct, clear not super technical, but just technical enough description. So thanks, Barry. I also wanted to agree with what you said before as far as this question may be completely redundant. We are getting at sort of this idea of pre-ordering and how it works. However, the only caveat I have is that I think we wanted to leave the door open for someone else to explain another business model that could also be affected. So one of the problems that we've seen is that much of the new GTLD program presumes one business model. Sort of the way sort of the legacy registries have done things, the way the legacy registrars have done things. So you look at the sort of VeriSign model, the selling GoDaddy model. Donuts has kind of opted into that model. But a lot of the policies and procedures and registries have tried to do different things. You know, there's this idea of the pre-order. There's, you know, these land rush phases. There's other concepts that have arisen in the context of different registries and registrars trying to do things differently. And if you code in too much of how the system is, the problem is you don't leave it room for expansion of how the system could be. So what I think one of the things we wanted to consider is not only is, you know, is the claims notice kind of working for people who are following the traditional flow and the flow that we know, which is that this pre-order model is butting up against the claims notice and it's complicated and it's hard and people are trying to figure it out. But I think we wanted to leave an option open, and this is really more for analysis group than maybe for us, but we wanted to leave the option open to say, you know, how, you know, is there something better? Like, tell us of a better way. Give us a better idea. You know, we don't have to be locked into this specific method of presenting a claims notice if you've got a better idea. So to analysis group's point, I think we – or to just kind of for analysis group's background, I think what we want to do is invite ideas that we're not just trying to measure how did it work in the past, but a huge part of our work is how should it be structured in the future, and are we considering the various business models, and is this model flexible enough to allow registries and registrars to innovate and expand and do things differently? Thanks.
And this is Greg from Analysis Group. That was really helpful. So thank you. I mean, we can it sounds like perhaps just more of an open-ended question instead of kind of providing these options would be useful just to allow people to kind of indicate how they might be kind of changing their business models with respect to when they, you know, how they're providing the notices. But I'm happy to hear what other people think about that.
This is Christine again, and until Julie tells me she's in, I think we can just self-manage the queue because we can see whose hands are up. I don't think anyone's just on the phone. The only thing I wanted to mention there is I agree with you, I think, but we may want to reorder then. So we start with, you know, the pre-ordering of domain names, how did we encounter challenges, and then there would be, and then maybe we do have it in Q18, actually. I just haven't read down far enough. Q18 says describe your experience, if any, where administration of the claim service was difficult. So maybe that's just it, you know. Maybe we just don't even need Q15 because we actually do ask, you know, tell us more about where claims was a problem and, you know, how this could work for you. So maybe we can just completely eliminate Q15, as Susan mentioned then.
And thanks, everyone. This is Julie. I'm still not in the room. I am listening on the phone, but thank you for self-managing. I really appreciate it.
Hi, this is Lori. Can I just respond to what Christine just offered as an intervention?
Go ahead, Lori.
Yeah, thank you. Christine, I see where you're headed with your comment, but what I'm worried about is if 15 just goes away, then there is a risk of not getting the answer because we're asking on 18 where was administration of the claims was difficult. And at 15, we're asking, well, at what point did a claim generate? It doesn't necessarily mean that it was difficult. So from a logic perspective, I'm a little hesitant to just say goodbye 15. They're not necessarily difficult. I mean, difficulty is different than when did something happen. And we want to know if that something happened, was it helpful, not helpful, or difficult, not difficult, whatever value word we choose. Thank you.
Thanks. This is Christine. My hand is up next. Yeah, you know, so Lori, to your point, I see what you're saying. So I think we heard about the mainstream process. That's what Barry described to us, and how the registrar is presented with a code, basically a thumbs up, thumb down. Is there a record? Is there not? If there's a record, then the registrar displays its static claims notice. Hey, someone claims that there's a claims notice. There's somebody claims that there's a mark. So there's no trademark record being downloaded. So if you go back to Q15, the question itself is invalid. So we have to back it up then. If the information that we think we're trying to get here is at what point is the trademark clearinghouse queried to receive information about a claims notice, if that's what we're asking, then perhaps that it is just becomes a wording issue then, Lori, right? So we just change that to say, I mean, if it's still relevant, I'm not sure what we would gain from this, but maybe we could get something. I'll have to think about it. At what point in the registration process do you typically query the trademark clearinghouse to receive a claims notice for a domain name? And then you could list those options. And is that, Lori, is that sort of what you're suggesting there? Thanks.
Hi, Christine. Yeah, I think that's more toward what I'm thinking because I just typed into the chat. So getting to your point about 15, it's like, so what is the most beneficial or least beneficial and why? I'm still trying in my head to logic out, okay, why does it matter where the notice is generated unless at that point in time that generation is helpful, hurtful, neutral? Again, unless I'm completely missing the point, I don't recall the calls about the registrar data, so that could just be a gap in my memory. But I guess I still don't get it.
Hi, Susan, can I leap in?
Yes.
So I don't know whether we are going to generate useful information or not, but I think the reason that we were trying to ask this was because we were trying to get more understanding of the theoretical abandonment rate. So we were trying to understand whether queries to the TMCH that would have been counted as a kind of generation of a claims notice were happening at a time when someone was genuinely attempting to make a purchase, or whether they were happening at a different stage in the process. But I'm not clear, having had Barry's explanation, I'm not clear whether we're going to elicit that information, or whether everyone is just simply going to repeat back to us, effectively, you know, tick whatever the box is that corresponds to the process that Barry has just described to us. And Christine is saying we aren't asking any abandonment questions, and you're absolutely right, Christine, but that's the comment that I had made in the document, which is a bit sort of out of place, which just says, hang on a minute, we've got a whole bunch of questions about abandonment here that aren't in the survey at all. And this may be a question back to Barry. But Barry, like from your understanding, does basically the process that you just described to us, is that what everyone does, or is it possible that some registrars go use a different process? And if it was the latter, would a way to ask this question be to give a summary, essentially a summary of, you know, the standard kind of legacy way, or you know, the standard way that we expect that a claims notice is generated is using the following process. Do you do anything different? And I can see Christine's got her hand up, and then Barry.
No, I just typed in the chat. I'm going to defer to Barry since you asked him a question, and I'll go.
Cool.
All right, thank you. This is Barry for the record. So, my response is first that at least I myself, and I can't say I'm not aware of anybody that has, that they've actually surveyed exactly when the claims notice is presented. I would say that it could be possible that if I were to query for the availability of a name, that a notice could be presented even before I entered it into the cart. I would say that's probably less likely. The more likely scenario is that only when the name has been added to the cart and they begin the payment process, is because they're basically starting to confirm that, yes, the registrant does want this name, is then when the claims notice is presented with other types of terms of service, et cetera, that kind of stuff. But it, again, more in the checkout process. The way the it's not an approved IEF standard, IEPF standard, but the entire CNIS, Trademark Clearinghouse database, all of that is documented in an IEPF document, and that's what I'm making reference to. It doesn't specify exactly when that happens, but it's more a logical process flow of the primary steps as to what I explained earlier. So I've been really referencing more that IEPF document than exactly what registrars are doing as they interpret that and implement on themselves. But again, I suspect it's more in the genre of the cart checkout process than just understanding whether the domain is available or not for registration, and there's a stop sign that says, you know, this might have an associated notice with it.
Thanks, Barry. This is Christina. I'm not sure if that answered Susan's question completely, but to be clear, we have actual data of registrars that do not follow that exact process as written. Yes, of course, the query, I think in Barry's information of the query was right, but we know that some corporate registrars take long lists from clients, and they register them when they get to them. The clients never sees that claims notice yet, you know, and then it's not, you know, there may be passed through. There could be other sort of broker situations happening. There, people are pre-ordering domain names, so the registrant has gone in and queried the name, but the registrar hasn't even put in any P code yet and hasn't sent any queries to the registry operator yet. So we know for a fact that there are some people who are doing things in kind of a different order, even if the ultimate process at the end of the day is the same. At the end of the day, ultimately, the registrar has to query the registry operator, has to get back that claims notice, and has to sort of have that available to display. But I think we want to get at the process of what, for the abandonment, we want to get at your typical process, where your registrar is going through your typical registrar. When are they presented with that data, and then when is the abandonment happening? But then we also wanted to get at the functional problem, so maybe that was the difference between Q15 and Q16. So Q15 would be, if you're sort of in a more standard process with a standard registry and a standard registrar, and you know, the registrant themselves is the person going in and querying for availability and is being presented with a trademark notice. When is that trademark claims notice being displayed in the process to the customer? And then can you correlate that to drops in registration, and how does that compare when there is no claims notice displayed? So if a customer sees that claims notice at the time when they attempt payment or when the domain is placed in the cart or whatever, are they sort of like frightened away? And if that same customer generally would come back during general availability and no claims notice, would they be more likely or less likely to complete the sale? And so I think that is sort of for analysis groups. I think we're possibly narrowing in a little bit on the difference between Q15 and Q18 and what it is we were trying to get at separately with both of those. Thanks.
Thank you very much, and this is Julie, and glad to be back in the room, and thank you so much to everyone for managing without me. I don't see any hands up right at the moment. Let me just ask Greg if this discussion has been helpful as far as let me just stop there, if that's been helpful, if you have any questions.
Yeah, no, I think it has. I don't have any questions at the moment, but I think we have enough to go on to both reorder these questions a little bit and then tweak them in some places.
Thank you very much for that. And I still need to get the survey document up. So if someone could tell me where we are at, and apologies again for coming out.
Okay, so we were
I think we were effectively covering, we were mostly covering 15, but I think we really sort of, in the course of that discussion, covered kind of 16 and 17 as well, and possibly even 18, because they're all sort of touching on this same process of when does the claims notice get generated, and particularly, you know, when does it get generated in a normal scenario and when does it get generated in a pre-order scenario. So unless anyone screams, and I can't see people screaming or hands up at the minute, the bit that I think we need to sort of circle back to is what I was alluding to in that comment that I made, that sort of floats around about question 15, but is not specifically related to 15, which was just to say that yes, for Greg and Stacey's benefit in particular, we had a kind of bunch of questions that we were seeking input on, that start at the bottom of page 10 on our document and go through to the first sort of section on page 11, and are all trying to understand more about this abandonment rate, and sort of how abandonment happens. And so there are ones about, you know, does the registrar have any records of abandonment? You know, do they have records for the legacy TLDs and CCTLDs? You know, do they know what the abandonment rate is during claims versus not during claims? And then some questions that go more to the kind of, for want of a better word, anecdote. You know, for example, have you had feedback that where registrants have told you why they haven't completed on a purchase, that kind of thing? And we haven't got any of those questions covered in our survey here at the moment. And so it's a question for you as to why. I mean, is it because you know from the previous work you've done that you've asked all these questions before and got a resounding silence, and so you're essentially saying to us, there is no point wasting our time trying this again. It's already been dealt with. There's no information available. Or is it for some other reason?
No, and this is Greg. So we had asked, I think, I mean, maybe not all of these questions before in the prior TMCH work, but most of them, and heard nothing back from registrars. And so I think in the interest of shortening the survey, we had thought that removing them would probably make the most sense. But, you know, we're happy to add some or all of them back in if there's some concern that they're not being asked here.
Thank you, Greg, and I see that there's a suggestion from Christine in the chat. If you think we aren't going to get abandonment data, could we ask people yes or no if they have/can/want to provide it, to keep their survey short for people who won't share this info or don't have it?
And this is Greg. I think it's a good suggestion, so we'd be happy to add that question in.
Oh, thank you, Greg. Not seeing.
Yeah, and I think that makes sense as well. I mean, I think we all in the group suspect that it's going to be difficult, if you know, difficult to get answers to this. But we also did feel like it was a, you know, an area that was missing. And you know, if we can get people to answer the questions, it would be good. So some kind of optional, you know, are you willing to be, you know, do a deeper dive on this? You know, please let us know. That would be helpful.
Well, thank you very much. This is Julie again from staff. I'm not seeing any hands up right now. I believe we've made it through all of the questions in the survey. Was there anything we will bring out as staff the note on the areas where there are the grids, where some additional thought is necessary. Is there anything else that anybody wants to raise or questions that you might have, Greg, concerning this survey? And I'll just note that we in absence of having Rebecca on the call, and I know she had a conflict for today, I don't think it makes sense to switch to the registrant or potential registrant surveys.
And this is Greg. I don't have any further questions today.
Thank you, Greg. Then looks like we've come to the end of the survey, and I don't think we have anything else to address on this call, unless somebody, unless there's something somebody wants to add. Not seeing any hands up. Christine says, not me. And I want to say thank you very, very much, Christine and Lori and Susan, for managing the room while my network difficulties were keeping me away. So thanks for all your work, and glad to be able to give you back a little bit of time. And Lori says, I cherish every minute. Yay, yes, exactly. So thanks again. And the next call is scheduled for Friday, in which we will try to then take off, get into the registrant and potential registrant surveys. Thanks again.
Brilliant. Thanks, everyone.